It all started innocently enough. All we wanted to do was keep the slugs from eating everything we planted. Here in the Pacific Northwest, slugs can destroy an entire planting of seedlings in a single night. Since my husband and I are organic market gardeners, our options are limited. Most of the things that kill slugs are on the officially prohibited list. For a while, we hand-pick the slimy creatures at dawn and drop them into a bucket of water and yeast. But it became apparent that I could spend every morning of my life at this Sisyphean task and still not harvest produce fit to sell. Crushed oyster shells helped a little, and so did agricultural lime. Purchased strips of plastic permeated with salt worked well, but they were much too costly for people trying to earn a living on 1 acre of land. At this point, early in March, the dawn of another slug season, our friend Donna offered us what appeared to be a perfect and inexpensive solution. All we needed was a few ducks, she said, and she had eggs due to hatch in a few days. Of course, they wouldn't be much help in the first few months, but by the time the rainy season started again, they would virtually eliminate our slug problem. We were hesitant. All we knew about ducks was that they flew over us twice a year. But Donna voiced the prevailing attitude, one that we were to encounter time and time again. Ducks take care of themselves. You don't have to do anything but throw them a little feed now and then. Right. Finally, convinced we were being unduly pessimistic, I brought the first 4 ducklings home the day after they were hatched. At the last minute, Donna told me that they'd need to stay in the house until they exchanged their soft baby down for real feathers. But I didn't pay much attention. I was busy falling in love with a tiny being whose bill was the size of my pinky fingernail and whose webbed feet were so delicate that every blood vessel showed. It all seemed quite simple. They could live in a box in my office. So, already feeling protective and maternal, I packed them home in a bucket to show David. David, ever the practical soul, wanted to know what I intended to do with them. Why, they're going to solve our slug problem, I stated confidently. Sure they are, but I meant, what are you going to do with them right now? We have slugs bigger than they are. Don't worry about a thing. Just bring in that old box the chipper came in and put it in my office. I bought starter mash for them at the feed store. It's kind of expensive, but they'll grow into the regular feed soon. Did I mention that I tend to get rabidly enthusiastic about everything I start? We lined the chipper box with an old plastic tablecloth and put thick pads of newspaper in the bottom. Since baby ducks love water but tend to drown if it's more than 2 inches deep, we gave them a cake pan full of water. We put food in a cereal bowl and rigged a trouble light for warmth. We released our fluffy yellow babies into their palatial new home and stood back to watch. They fluttered frantically the length of the pool, through the food dish, and back through the water, peeping and pooping all the way. Within minutes, it was apparent that we'd have to change their food, water, and papers several times a day. At the end of the first week, we were out of newspapers, we'd gone through $5 worth of food, and the entire house reeked of duck. But they were delightful. There was none of the mindless pecking at each other that chickens are known for. They simply made more mess than anything that size should be capable of. At the end of 2 weeks, we began putting them outside for most of the day. We bought a 100-foot roll of 2-foot poultry wire to make them a playpen, justifying the expense by telling each other that the rest of the roll was bound to come in handy for something. Now we only had to change their box once a day, and preparations began for their move to the great outdoors. We began hand-feeding them small slugs, which they seemed to consider a rare delicacy. We dismantled the old pump house that wouldn't fit the new pump and turned it into an A-frame shelter. At 2 months, the ducks moved into the garden on a permanent basis, free to forage during the day, bedded down in their A-frame at night. What a relief! No more schlepping them into the house every evening. No more need to leave the doors and windows open day and night in order to breathe. We had nearly $100 invested in food, wire, and incidentals, and the only slugs they'd eaten had been served to them on a cabbage leaf. But hey, things were looking up. We slid almost imperceptibly from spring into a peaceful summer, and it looked as if everything was working out just fine. The ducks followed us around the garden, waiting for us to turn up goodies, and they actually ate slugs. Lots of slugs. It's amazing how far a slug can stretch with a duck pulling at either end. All the initial expense was worth the pleasure of watching them work a carrot bed. Bills buried in the soil, tails up and twitching, chuckling self-importantly deep in their throats. It was a sight guaranteed to lower a gardener's blood pressure. As the ducks gained confidence, strength, and weight, a new problem surfaced. Ducks have large, flat feet, suitable for trampling seedlings. It didn't help that our ducks were pickins, the largest and heaviest type. What's more, wherever we'd been disturbing the soil, as we tend to do when planting seedlings, was where the ducks wanted to be. Have you ever tried shooing ducks out of a 30-feet-long, 4-feet-wide raised bed? They panic, flap, squawk, and then run the length of the bed several times. I began to detect a malicious gleam in their eyes as they danced among the seedlings. They also wanted to come in the back door. They hung around the porch like teenagers on a street corner. I have an aversion to wasting all that fine fertilizer by tracking it into the kitchen, so we ran a strip of wire the width of the property between the garden and the house. We bought 4 more rolls of wire. We began using it to surround various areas of the garden that we wanted free of ducks. Now we were gardening in a maze, having to step over at least 2 fences to get anywhere. There were occasional accidents, but the system worked well as long as we paid close attention to where we were walking. It only took a few minutes to move a length of wire from one spot in the garden to another. One day, I watched David, a heavy bucket in either hand, march down the path, suddenly step high and swing the buckets over empty air, then continue on his way. He hadn't noticed that I'd moved the wire. In midsummer, the job of putting the ducks to bed became an exercise in frustration. There's a limit to how long I'm willing to chase ducks, and I reached that limit in early August. They simply didn't want to go to bed on warm summer nights, and I couldn't blame them a bit. They were now too large to tempt hawks and owls, and I figured that if we couldn't catch them, neither could anything else. This pleasant interlude came to an abrupt end one morning when our 2 females were found dead. We suspected weasel, because the villain had simply opened the throats and sucked them dry. We buried the girls and began construction on a pest-proof pen up near the house for the drakes, who were suddenly willing, even eager, to be put to bed in the evening. The new pen required a roll of 6-foot wire and 10 posts at $3 each. Our drakes were lonely, and Donna had more ducks, so she gave us a gray pair of uncertain lineage and Stella, a mallard with the raucous voice of a middle-aged barfly. A week later, the gray female was dead, the pitiful little corpse left beside the pest-proof pen. I lost all sense of perspective. I dug a trench and buried the bottom 6 inches of the fence. I used a complex series of bungee cords and wires to secure the gate. I left the bedroom window open at night so I could hear the ducks should they be disturbed, and I began jumping up to run out naked at every night sound. You can get away with that sort of thing in the country. The dog was as crazy as I was, and together we ran howling into the night several times a week. It didn't save James, who never made a sound while becoming dead. It did, however, save Fella, the remaining pickin. One night, the dog and I ran shrieking from the house to see a raccoon struggling to drag Fella through a hole he'd excavated near the gate. I snatched Fella by one leg, and the raccoon was gone. There I stood with a horribly injured duck and without the courage to finish the job. Fella survived, though the feathers never grew back on his head and neck, and he held his head strangely cocked. We put the food dish on an old wheel to get it up where he could reach it without straining his damaged neck muscles. Donna came through for us again, donating Lady, a pickin' female, to keep Fella and the rowdy Stella company. By this time, the pen was more impregnable than a local maximum security prison. But that's another story. We began to relax, and I slept through the night again. Then we came home from town one day to find that a pair of stray dogs had killed all three ducks. David dug the inevitable hole, while I, blubbering, gathered up our little friends. For a week, I moped. The garden was too still, too predictable. Besides, it would soon be slug season again, and we had several $100 invested in this final solution to the slug problem. The simple truth is, I enjoy ducks. It's not possible to watch them waddle down a path without smiling. A freshly filled wading pool will bring on a veritable circus of diving, flapping, darting, and preening. It's a show I'd pay to see. There is no meanness in them. When Fella was injured and couldn't keep up, they stayed near him as if in moral support. I'm hooked on ducks. So we looked at our dwindling bank account and began discussing fencing the entire place. While we stood in the front yard arguing passionately, me for a fence and David for a woodshed, a strange mongrel ran around the corner of the house with our cat's food dish in his mouth. We invested over $700 and a month's labor in fencing. Then we bought three grown mallards, and they've brought the garden back to life. We watch them patrol their territory by day, tuck them in at night, and harvest slime-free produce. In a pen in the greenhouse, safe and warm under lights, are four Swedish blue ducklings, warming up in the bullpen, so as to speak, and cute as, well, as ducks. Just don't let anyone tell you they're a cheap solution to the slug problem.